Good evening, everybody. This is Josh Blazer from GameWisdom.com. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. We got a great cast for you tonight. We're going to be catching up with Harebrained Studios, talking about BattleTech, as well as their upcoming game, Necropolis. And please welcome back from the studio, Executive Studio Head, Mitch Gittleman.
Hey there. How you doing?
Great. It's great to have you back on, Mitch. I think we last spoke, what was it, like October?
Yeah, that sounds right. I think when we were doing the Kickstarter for BattleTech.
Oh, yeah. It's been a few months. I know a whole lot's changed. I guess it's a belated Happy New Year for you guys as well.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. Yeah, 6 months. I don't know. It feels like forever. You know, it's Harebrained Schemes time is a little different than human time, I think. we go very fast around here.
Mm-hmm. So, I know, as I said, we're going to be talking about Necropolis tonight, but to get the ball rolling then, just to catch everybody up, I know last time we spent the entire cast talking about BattleTech and the studio's view and use of Kickstarters. So, how's everything going with BattleTech since we last spoke?
Swimmingly. good. We've got a working prototype of the game that we're rolling through and playing around with that. We've added some team members. We're about to add more team members. Lots and lots of documentation written. Mm-hmm. We've launched our BattleTech forums, what we call ComStar, the Global BattleTech Community Forum. Cool. So a lot of people coming on there. We just announced that the BattleTech Tabletop Community Forums were just added. So we're trying to make this sort of global hub for BattleTech fans from around the world. Sort of uniting them under one banner.
Awesome. And for people listening, just to catch them up on, what was the grand total of the Kickstarter in with?
I think all totaled, it was about $3.3 million when all was said and done.
Impressive. I know, as we spoke last time, this was Kickstarter number 4 for you guys, I believe.
Yep, that's true. That's true. I guess we figured out how to do it.
Yes. And for those of you listening to the cast, be sure I'll include a link to the podcast notes from our previous cast below, but be sure to check that out as we spent a lot of time talking both about BattleTech and about Harebrained Studios' use of Kickstarter. Other than that, I guess just one final quick question regarding BattleTech. Are you guys still on track? I know when we last saw you spoke about the 18-month development cycle. Are things still going as planned for you guys?
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about, you know, game development is, you know, you're roughly 80% confident in your next milestone. You're about 50% confident in the milestone after that, about 25% confident after the milestone after that. But, you know, we got the project scoped the right way. So, yeah, we're still looking at about an 18-month development cycle.
Awesome. I can't wait to check the game out. Once you guys have some playable, a playable demo or a bay or whatever, I would love to take a look at it.
Yeah, you and me both, pal.
Of course. All right. So for tonight, I know we can talk about so many different topics. Mm-hmm. When we last spoke, I know you brought up about Xbox Live, and I would love to pick your brain about that, but that's a good 2-hour conversation. I know we're all very busy. I'm sure I don't want to keep you any longer from BattleTech and about Necropolis.
Yeah, it's a busy life.
Yes, it
that's
is.
For sure. And also, very soon, Shadowrun Hong Kong, the extended edition, actually by the time this airs, will be out.
Amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
What's going to be in that compared to the original release?
Well, in our third Kickstarter for Shadowrun Hong Kong, our final stretch goal was to add a mini campaign after the game was released so that your high-level characters could get imported into it and keep playing. And so we've got a 5 or 6 hour-plus mini campaign that we've added to the main campaign. And we're doing that for free. So anybody who's bought Shadowrun Hong Kong just gets that content at no extra charge. And anybody who buys it from now on just gets it added at the same price. It's included.
Great.
Yeah, and it's a great, you know, it's sort of after the main story ends, how you and your crew sort of resolve your sort of personal stories. And, you know, you have to decide, do you go back to America, to Seattle at the end of the story, or do you stay in Hong Kong?
Cool.
And how? Yeah, very personal ending of the story. It's nice.
Awesome. Now, obviously, you guys are still working on BattleTech. Do you see yourselves revisiting Shadowrun again in the future?
We love Shadowrun. Desperately love Shadowrun. Do we see revisiting it in the future? Yeah, just when? No clue yet.
Of course.
You know, but yeah, I think if we come back to Shadowrun, if and when we come back to Shadowrun, that would probably be in a new game engine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a whole bunch of different bells and whistles.
Cool. It sounds amazing, Mitch. So, for tonight, let's get to our big topic. As we said a few minutes ago, Harebrain is also working on the game Necropolis, and I know we kind of spoke a little bit about that at the end of our previous cast, but since then, I know you guys have been working hard on it, and you have some major announcements regarding it.
Well, the game comes out on Steam on March 17th.
Mm-hmm.
Or has already by the time this air. Oh, no, March 17th. Yeah,
no.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. We recently added co-op multiplayer to the game,
mm-hmm.
which is just a hoot because, you know, the game is all about, you know, winding your way down through the necropolis, trying to escape, but you die over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, because it's a roguelike, you're trying to make your way as far as you can before you die and have to start again. But with your friends, you can make a lot more progress and have people watching your back and stuff like that. It's really a hoot. We thought the game was great, you know, when we played it, when we brought it to PAX East and won Game of the Show and stuff. But once we started playing it four-player co-op, it really took off for us. That's when we started giggling our heads off. And, you know, that's a lot of fun. And what's fun about it also is that, you know, you can hurt each other if you're not careful.
Oh,
so you got to watch how you swing those enormous swords.
All right. Now, since we last spoke previously on the cast, we talked a little bit about the game. So for tonight, I think we're going to spend a lot more time focusing on what Necropolis is.
Sure. Well, Necropolis is a 3D action game to start with, right? So if you imagine sort of that Dark Souls-style timing-based combat, mm-hmm. in a dungeon crawl, that's the first part of it. So, you know, it's all about timing, and you pick up all these different weapons throughout the necropolis as you explore deeper and deeper. And each weapon really changes how you play the game, mm-hmm. because of the timing of the weapon. You know, the giant hard ones, you know, longer and slower to swing and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's the core of the game, blended with it being a roguelike, which means, you know, death is inevitable and often, and you just keep trying to get yourself farther and farther and farther while picking up new stuff in the game, you know, new weapons, new equipment, you know, new armor sets, new shields, potions. And of course, you're collecting stuff along the way too. We have this, you know, crafting system in there so that you can make things that'll be usable along the way. Plus, there are vendors in the game too. That's the best way to describe them. People in the labyrinth that you can trade in gems and things to get even better stuff.
Cool. Now, you mentioned, of course, Dark Souls, and that is a game that I'm sure my audience is very knowledgeable on. We've spoken about that so many times, and it's kind of interesting to hear you talk about that, Mitch, because the Dark Souls experience is such a polarizing one. There are people who love those games, and there are people who they just bounce completely off of it. They cannot take it. They can't play it. For you guys, how did you, I guess, approach developing a game like around this kind of high skill level design?
Well, we've got this idea that, you know, just like a lot of great games, you know, it's easy to start out but difficult to master. So you can try and button mash in the beginning of the game and you'll have limited success. But after a while, you have to get skilled to go on. And, you know, we just want to make games for gamers and, you know, people who like that sort of stuff. So if you like Dark Souls, I think you'll love this. The great thing about it is it's such easy in and out. It's not like, you know, a major time commitment of, you know, days, weeks, months, or that kind of thing. Play for a while, die, keep going, die for a while, keep going, etc. So, you know, we really feel like the game is accessible. Plus, the art style is so different. It's not this dark, moody, well, it's dark, but it, you know, this, you know, heavy, moody place. It's, you know, this interesting low poly sort of indie type art style that we really like. And that coupled with the tone of the game, you know, it's kind of a humorous game. It makes fun of itself. The Necropolis was created by this archmage called Abraxas, and it's basically this giant museum for all the crap he's collected for thousands and thousands of years. But it's not only like different places that he's basically just teleported directly into the Necropolis, it's also the denizens of those locations. So, you know, along with all the stuff he's collected, there's some of the monsters he's collected too. And they're all just sort of wandering around free. It appears like he's lost control of the Necropolis. We're not really sure. And he's got this this character called the Brazen Head. And the Brazen Head's this giant sort of pyramid that controls the Necropolis, sort of like his butler. And and so while Abraxas is away, the Brazen Head is running things and will ask you to do things or give you information. And it becomes clear over time what the Brazen Head's agenda really is. So that'll be interesting to explore. But the Brazen Head is, you know, pretty funny character. I mean, you know, it's got this interesting self-referential tone. I mean, the game knows it's a game. The game knows the genre it's in. You know, and it makes fun of things like, you know, the old Conan the Barbarian novels and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. Now, in terms of the actual, like, play space, is the game featuring, like, randomized maps or preset maps?
Yeah, well, because it's a roguelike, it's very important that the game be randomized. So it's procedurally generated. And so every time you die, you're getting a different Necropolis, and it rearranges all the environments and the enemies within there and the treasure assortments and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, it's a fresh experience every time you play. You never know what's going to happen, and it can get pretty scary. I mean, not in a sort of creepy Silent Hill way, just like, ah, they're all over me sort of way.
Yeah, and procedurally generated design is definitely a very fascinating topic. And it's one of those things that can really elevate a game, especially with the roguelike genre. There are still people who love the game Spelunky, which
Exactly. That was an inspiration for us.
Yeah. Which, for those of you who may not have heard of it, Spelunky is a 2D game or 2D roguelike platformer that also features a very powerful algorithm for its procedurally generated design, so that every level was not the same, but was still built in a way that you could play through it. Like, it never presented you with a unsolvable level. It was designed to make sure everything was beatable by the player.
Right. Right, right. And yeah, that was a strong influence for us. So if you think about it, really, Necropolis is kind of Dark Souls meets Spelunky, right? And I think we're the first 3D roguelike, at least that I've seen. So it's a pretty cool way to experience that sort of gameplay. You know, I'm an FTL player. So yeah, we're excited to have people play it. You know, when they got their hands on it at PAX East and PAX Prime, you know, people were going nuts. We, you know, we had crowds 3 and 4 people deep, you know,
nice,
to play the game. Yeah, it was a blast. And it's great to see how many people from all walks of life really liked the game. And so that was really encouraging, too.
Yeah, it's very interesting to hear about how much popularity there is about the roguelike genre these days. Again, we talked about Dark Souls earlier, but like the Demon's Souls series has really, I guess, brought roguelikes into the mainstream. And that's been carried by games like The Binding of Isaac, FTL, Spelunky. And it seems like the genre has really gotten to, I guess we could say, almost like a mass market appeal in terms of its audience now.
Well, I don't know about mass market. We'll see, you know. It'll be interesting to see how successful this game is and seeing what size of an audience we can ultimately reach.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the gameplay itself, how, I guess, is a player going to be interacting with the world? Is it going to just be pure hack and slash? Will there be, like, exploration elements?
Oh, there's exploration up the wazoo. I mean, if you could imagine, since it is a procedurally generated, you know, dungeon. There's a lot of exploration in this game. And, you know, it's a winding place. It's, you know, it's not laid out logically because Abraxas just grabbed these pieces from all over the universe and just sort of slapped them together. So it's pretty neat the way it winds. And also what's great about it is, you know, it's got this real sort of open design too. So we have a lot of ledges and bridges and stuff, so you can look over and see the level down below you, you know, and you can see it going down and down and down and off into the distance. It's really cool. And part of the cool thing about it is, for example, you know, there are potions that can help you with this. You could jump off that ledge and just go right down to the next level. And yeah, those, you know, hopefully your weapons and equipment is good enough to take on the monsters that are down there. But, you know, you can sort of short circuit places in the necropolis if you want from that point of view. And it's really cool, you know, they're shifting and moving platforms and stuff like that, rotating platforms. So yeah, exploration is a big part of it. Like I said before, the crafting is something interesting when you pick up, like, you know, the eyes of a grind, which is one of our monsters, or something like that. What can I make out of this? So there's a collecting element to it also. And then of course there's treasure chests and things like that, you know. What game would be complete if there weren't some pots to break to find the gems inside? You know, it wouldn't be a dungeon crawler without it. So there's plenty of things to find, and they're hidden in interesting locations, and there may be some secret rooms and stuff like that. We'll see. Plus, on the walls, you'll find graffiti from adventurers that have gone through the necropolis, just like you, who may be leaving you clues or stuff like that. So there's a lot to interact with in the constantly shifting game world. And then, of course, there's a lot of stuff to kill.
Of course. We need that.
Yeah. And what's interesting about it is that the different beasties that are in the necropolis, some of them don't like each other. And if you attract one group to another group, they'll start kicking the shit out of each other. And then you can come in and play cleanup.
Now, speaking about the environment like that, how, like, wide or how spacious are the game spaces? Is it going to be like a dungeon crawler, you know, very narrow corridors forcing you to fight? Or are the levels more open-ended?
It's procedurally generated, yeah. So you'll have to see. I mean, there's a lot of different types of locations, from very narrow places to big rooms to, you know, narrow bridges. There's all sorts of different play spaces in there, and you know, they attach to each other in different ways to really create unique geometry.
Okay. Now, talking more about the gameplay, again, the Dark Souls, Demon Souls influence, one of the things that made a lot of people fall in love with the series is the high skill level required to play. The combat is very refined, very focused, and it is very much about player skill as opposed to gear. You can have the best damn sword in the game, but if you don't know how to dodge or block, you're going to get killed every time.
Yeah, you're going to see elements of that in our game as well. Like I said, you know, it's one of those easy to pick up and play but difficult to master games. And as you go down and down trying to get out of the necropolis, because the only way out is down, you know, you're going to be encountering worse and worse, nastier and nastier enemies. And, you know, yeah, you're going to have to learn how to overcome them and hopefully survive that first combat so you can, you know, get past them. But yeah, it's a, I won't say the game is punishing. I will say that it's a challenge. It's, you know, it's not for everybody, that's for sure. And that's part of the cool, you know, part about it is it's approachable to everybody. And everybody we've seen that has picked up and played it, you know, certainly early on in the game, just adored it. And it's a lot of times at these shows, we have to kick people off. So in our next demo, we've actually implemented a timer just to make sure enough people get their turn. But yeah, definitely Dark Souls influenced in that way.
Cool. Now, as we talk about with the progression, by the fact that this game is procedurally generated, it's meant to be played multiple times, how long do you estimate like a single, I guess, quote-unquote playthrough of the Necropolis will be?
Well, if you're an expert player, you know, we'll see. You know, what's funny is, sorry, I'm looking at the team right now as I say this, and, you know, several of our people have never gotten past level 7. So yeah, I can't tell you how long it'll take to play because several of us just aren't good enough to find out.
Good. That sounds great. I know there's a lot of roguelike fans will love, they are chomping at the bit to play anything challenging, anything that's going to test their skills.
Yeah, we're not making like a nerfy game, you know. Although it's got a very accessible art style and stuff like that, and it's you know, sort of wide, you know, has sort of a wider appeal. That doesn't mean we're not giving you the gameplay that you expect from a roguelike. Definitely not.
Yeah. Now, one topic that I definitely want to touch on with you, Mitch, regarding Necropolis, is the progression system itself. Because this is another major element behind roguelikes, especially games that are meant to be constantly replayed. When we look at, in most typical roguelikes, or at least the older ones, before the days of FTL, Binding of Isaac, it was simply, you die, back to zero, everything you did, gone, erase, see you later. One of the things that we've been seeing a lot more, even with games like Demon's Souls and Dark Souls, is having that sense of persistent elements in it. Binding of Isaac had the achievement system that unlocked new items. Demon's Souls let you keep your equipment and your soul level, etc. For Necropolis, how does like progression or meta progression work in the game?
Well, the truth is, I don't want to say too much because I want people to sort of experience it. And what we're hoping for is not to give away the farm on information so that people start sharing this stuff with each other. But I will say there are books, what we call codexes or codices, that you can find in the game that will give you information about that. And I'd prefer to people sort of experience it themselves. So if you don't mind, I'm going to call that a secret for now. But it's, hopefully it's a fun secret for people to figure out. So I will say that the metagame that you're talking about will evolve over your gameplay and through more experience with the game.
Are you able to comment on whether or not you do start back like square one when you die?
Yes, definitely. When you start playing the game, you start back square one. That may change, but
you can't say anything about that now.
Well, I won't. Okay, and that's part of the fun. You know, we're trying to make it so that exploration and repeated play actually, you know, there's something to learn.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's always a very major element behind these roguelikes with the randomization and meta progression. I mean, with the Binding of Isaac, I've spent, dear God, I think I've gone over 100 hours playing all the iterations and versions of that game.
Oh, this game, I think, was just made for you then.
Oh, yes. And you brought up, you mentioned Spelunky and Dark Souls. So, I mean, those two right there just raise a lot of flags in people's heads who are listening to this cast right now.
Yeah, well, it's funny, you know, when the team came to my partner, Jordan Weissman, and I, and said, we want to make a game called Necropolis. We're like, all right, let's hear the pitch. And the pitch was really that simple. It's like, all right, think Dark Souls meets Spelunky. It's like,
okay,
all right, you have my attention. You absolutely have my attention. You know, and so we greenlit it that day in the meeting. We didn't wait and deliberate. Yep, go make that game. And they took, you know, the leadership of the team took the summer and just the three of them, maybe four of them, and just started iterating on it and coming up with a prototype that proved out the concept. And then, bam, they were approved for full production. We threw a team about 25 on it. You know, so it's a big and important game for harebrained schemes. And one of the things I'm really proudest of is that, you know, this is not one of those, you know, old nostalgia licenses like Shadowrun or Battletech. This is a brand new game, brand new game setting, original. And so that's a big deal for us. Second, it's our first fully 3D game as harebrained schemes. Of course, I've been making 3D games since, you know, I don't know, the 3D was almost invented. But so that's a big deal for harebrained schemes. And the other thing is that, you know, Jordan and I aren't involved in the production of the game. You know, and this is the first game that we've released that, you know, we're just sort of coaches and supporters and, of course, financiers. So it's a big deal for us. It's quite a milestone for the studio, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, and the game sounds amazing. I think I said the exact same thing when we spoke in October, when you're just talking about, you know, the brief elevator pitch of it back then. Now, on what you just said, there's 2 points I definitely want to touch on, because I think you made some really interesting statements here. The first one is about working on an original IP. This is something that I always find very interesting about game development, especially about major studios, when you're working on an original IP versus someone else's. When you are working on something that's licensed, you are limited by what you can and can't do. We've heard so many stories of, you know, what the licensor will let you do. Now, for you guys, as you just said, this is the first game you're working on that's entirely original.
No, not the very first. Well, I mean, Golem Arcana also. Okay. Is an original one too, but you know, that's a tabletop game. You know, so this is the first, you know, fully 3D video game that we've made.
So
with an original IP.
Okay, and for my question then, with that approach, and as you guys have moved from working on Shadowrun and BattleTech again, which are licensed properties, how did that affect or influence like the design or the aesthetics of Necropolis? Given the fact you now have complete freedom with your own IP.
Well, that's exactly it. It's, you know, it's the freedom to create. So instead of taking a historical game setting and adapting it to, you know, to to the game environment that we're making now, you know, and having to adhere to all the canon that's come from the past. Well, what's interesting is it's a matter of, you know, form following function. Instead of sort of function following form, in that, you know, we have to adhere to the history of the game setting. Instead, we can create a game setting that reinforces the game that we're making. So it's, you know, sometimes a game setting can feel sort of like a straitjacket to you. But here with the Necropolis, for example, right, we have this procedurally generated dungeon. Right. And so that immediately goes, well, all right, how do we explain that fictionally? And that's when we came up with the idea of Abraxas, the Archmage, who, you know, snatched all these different pieces from of environment, from different planes of existence he's been to or whatever. And that's why it, you know, regenerates around you. And so it's a great way of explaining it, you know, and justifying it and making it fun. So that's just an example of how that sort of thing works. And then as we put different monsters in, you know, we create little backstories for the monsters, just for us, but also to put into graffiti and that kind of thing. And again, it just comes down to, hey, we need a monster that does this. Oh, well, then let's make something that does that. You know, as opposed to, well, let's look up on page 34, you know, of this compendium of rules from 1989 to see if something fits what we need. You know, and that's what happens a lot. It's like, oh, wow, I need a real tough, long-range sniper type thing. All right, yeah, pull out all the books and look through to see if something like that exists so that we can put that form over the function we need, as opposed to just going, what do we need? All right, let's make it up. So you're right. It gives you a lot of creative freedom.
Cool. And the other point is what you just said regarding the fact that this is your harebrained first fully 3D game as well. And this is one of those things that's very interesting, especially talking to developers who start or are focused primarily on 2D design, which we see a lot of indie developers do, obviously because of the ease of development and the, I guess, some of like the limiting factors actually make it easier to work with. For you guys at Harebrained, I know this topic will probably be way too big to talk too much about tonight, but to just touch on from a high level, how did things like differ in terms of your approach and your design implementation working with a fully 3D game as opposed to the isometric or turn-based style of like games like Shadowrun?
Well, I mean, if you from an isometric point of view, it's pretty easy. It's like, oh, there's a table. I can see what's on the other side of the table, right? But in a first-person view, that's a completely different thing. It's occluded. So anything could be hiding behind that table. You know, or there's a fog layer in the distance, so I can't see what's coming towards me. And so then it becomes, how do we lead the player's eye and highlight the different ways that you can leave a room? So lighting becomes very important. And you know, when we talk about exploration, it's like, okay, how do we light this room to reinforce the idea of exploration, but also give you an idea of how to get the hell out of the room in the first place? So all sorts of elements lead into that. And that's why you often, you know, with a 2D game, what you might want to do is just sketch everything and draw it sort of, you know, from an isometric point of view and figure out, you know, where everything comes from. With a 3D game, a lot of times what we do is we just rough it all in with blocks, you know, 3D blocks, and look at it through the camera, because you can't just sketch it on paper. You have to experience it to see what the room is really going to be like from the first person perspective. So it's a different mindset, to be sure.
Yeah. And also, as we said, with the Dark Souls style gameplay, when you are focusing more on player skill as opposed to the abstraction of the design, it requires a completely different approach.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You know, it's always fun. That's why we really like doing all sorts of different things here. You know, we call it harebrained schemes for a reason. And that's because we rarely make the same thing twice, and we're always pushing ourselves in different areas. And we get better as game developers, and you get a larger toolkit, and then you can apply these things, you know, in different ways.
Definitely. And that's one of the things we're seeing a lot about with indie studios of today as opposed to like 10, 15 years ago, where a lot of studios became very specialized. If you made a first-person shooter, you're only going to make first-person shooters, or you become the dedicated strategy game developer, etc.
And why do you think that is, though?
Because it becomes very easy, becomes routine. You basically work with what you know. You never get out of your own box, in a sense.
In a sense, yes, but there's another way of looking at it, which is, of course, that's true, but it's also a matter of risk management.
Yes.
And so, you know, game development is fraught with peril. Anything in the entertainment industry is fraught with peril.
Definitely.
And you're one or two failures away from closing your studio.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the idea for a lot of people is develop a great skill set, keep at that, keep building that one thing and becoming expert at it, so that you know, you can build that audience, build that skill set, and ultimately build your studio. If you look at BioWare, for example, you know, with Baldur's Gate, etc., you know, they're basically just making the same game over and over and over again, but they're building their skill set and building their audience, you know, and growing into something very, very special. So I don't want to characterize that as being in a box, because as you can see, especially when you got to Jade Empire and they went fully 3D, you know, I couldn't call that a box. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't believe they've limited themselves. I believe they've specialized without a doubt, but that's the opposite of what we're doing right now. But I think we're insane.
I think we all are a little crazy. I think.
Yeah. I just don't recommend this as a business model. How about that?
Yeah. And another part about being able to branch out and do all these things differently is that it definitely opens you up to designs and mechanics that you wouldn't think about otherwise. There's a lot, especially in the last 5-10 years, we've seen a lot of games start combining genres and mechanics together to create something entirely new and different. Probably my go-to example would be one of my favorite games, The World Ends With You, from Square Enix for the Nintendo 3DS. Just an insane mismatch of genres and gameplay controls, that it just was like completely out of the box, was completely out of anything they would have ever done, and it just worked for me because of that.
Well, that's great. You know, a lot of people would find that kind of odd, and a lot of people talk about, oh, you stole this from this game and this from this game. I encourage you, everybody out there on YouTube, to go and take a look at a series of, I think, 4 YouTube videos called Everything is a Remix. And it's a great little documentary that explains how everything is a remix. And when you think about originality, you're just fooling yourself, you know, and how Led Zeppelin just watch it yourself. You'll be amazed. It's like, oh, I thought Led Zeppelin was really original. No, they're not. You know, everybody's cribbing everybody, and that's just all there is to it. Yeah, fascinating world.
Oh, yes. And again, with game design, especially with combining these genres and combining these different elements, you do get things that, as you just said, Mitch, yes, they are borrowing elements from other games, other mechanics and theories, but they do in a way that becomes sort of like their own stamp, their own unique take on that genre.
Absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Now, I know we are about 40 minutes in. I know you have to probably get going in a few minutes.
Yeah, fortunately, yeah. I've got a studio to run, and there's miles to go before we sleep.
Yes. I know we were supposed to have one of the leads of Necropolis on, but I think you, like, tied him to the desk. And
that's exactly what happened. Yeah, there is a ball and chain around his ankle. Absolutely true. That's Chris Rogers, the art director.
Yeah, and hopefully, once at some point in the future, if you can free him, it'll be great to have both of you guys on to talk.
Yeah, well, once we ship the game, maybe we'll let him come out of his hole. I don't know.
All right. To get back to Necropolis and to wrap things up, just a few, I guess, ending questions then for you, and then we'll say goodbye.
All right.
So, getting back to the actual general gameplay, you mentioned sort of like the monster designs earlier. I'm just really curious, keeping with the fact that it's a procedurally generated game and with the roguelike elements, are there considered, like, quote-unquote boss fights in the game?
No.
Okay. So it is basically just all the enemies can come at you at any time kind of thing based on the procedurally generated engine?
And based on where you are in the Necropolis and your power level, yeah.
Okay.
And then there's a question of the combinations of those enemies.
All right. Are there going to be things like modifiers to enemies, like what we see in Diablo, you know, like the rare version, the champion version, etc.?
TBD. Yeah, I'd rather not say.
Okay. And as we said at the beginning of the cast, you are playing for Necropolis to be released on March 17th, right?
On Steam, that's right.
All right. Will it be available on any other platforms?
Let's hope. Cross your fingers on that one.
All right. And one question that I definitely didn't want to forget about asking you. I know this is may be considered too soon, but do you guys have any ideas or plans for post-release support in Necropolis?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can see there's all sorts of things, you know, in success that we'd like to do, you know, new adventurers for you to attack the Necropolis with, new enemies, new different environment sets that get mixed in to the Necropolis. Yeah, there's all sorts of ideas that we have. I'd love to do that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's definitely been a great cast so far, Mitch. I know with these kinds of conversations, we'll either end up being like on the shore end like this, or we could sit here and talk for like the next three hours.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, again, it was great talking in October with BattleTech, and it was definitely a pleasure having you on tonight to talk about Necropolis. Sounds like a very fascinating game, and again, considering the roguelike and the themes of Dark Souls and Spelunky, it sounds right up my alley.
That's great. Well, I look forward to hearing how you like it once you get your hands on it. And thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, no problem, Mitch. Again, at some point when you're free, when everyone is unchained, we need to have that talk about Xbox Live, because I have so many questions regarding that. And it'll be great to have you back on again with good news about Necropolis and, of course, about BattleTech in the future.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciated being here.
Awesome. So with that said, folks, we're going to wrap things up here. Thanks so much for listening to this cast. As always, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom, we have several options available. First, if you'd like to submit a guest piece of the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find information and links under Submissions Wanted. Right now, I am currently looking for new guests. So if you're a student, enthusiast, developer, whoever, as long as you're interested in talking about design or the industry, I'd love to have you on. If you'd like to contribute to Game Wisdom's Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom, and any donations would be greatly appreciated. And you can click that handy-dandy banner on the top of the front page. And as always, if you'd like to check out my daily live streams and plays and of various titles, you can find all the recordings on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel, which is on the front page link. And you can check out the Twitch stream most nights at 10 Eastern under GW Blazer to watch a variety of plays live. By the time you're listening to this cast, I should either be wrapping up or still in the midst of my Big Darkest Dungeon play, where I'm streaming as much of the game as I can to see when I get through it. So be sure to check all that out. With all that said, thanks so much for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.